Pat McDonald, we're going to do the really annoying thing. We're going to talk about a movie today that no one's really going to be able to see for quite a while. So consider this an archival piece, an evergreen piece, but a piece I think definitely worth listening to.
Someday, yes.
The Chicago Critics Film Festival just ended its 11th edition this week, or last week as this episode goes up. And one of the films they showed was called Dandelion by Nicole Riegel, or Riegel. Is it? I think it's Riegel.
I think it's Riegel.
Okay.
But I don't know.
But the movie Dandelion, it really struck me. I think it's a pretty solid movie, but I think it's got a performance that you need to go see this movie for. And that performance is the centerpiece by Kiki Layne, who was at the festival. I know you interviewed her, and when the movie comes out, whenever it does, I think the release day is still TBD. Folks can go and watch, check that out with your stuff. And in fact, I'm going to travel back in time whenever that happens and post the link to that interview down below. So if you're watching this in the future, look below.
Lots of parameters here.
Right. And also, in some form or another, I don't know if I'll tack it onto this video or have it its own separate thing, because it's very brief, but I actually interviewed Kiki Layne on the red carpet for the festival. So I got two very good, very brief questions and answers out of her. But we're going to talk about Dandelion today, and I don't want to get too spoilery with it, because A, it's not out yet. B, no one's seen it. And C, I think people should see it, as I mentioned, for the performance more than perhaps the overall story. But right. Pat, what did you think about Dandelion? And if you wouldn't mind, can you summarize? Can you synopsize Dandelion?
Well, it's a fairly simple story in the sense that you have a struggling singer-songwriter played by Kiki Layne. And she goes by the stage name of Dandelion. And she lives in Cincinnati, and she has a regular gig in a hotel. And her mother has become ill, and therefore she's kind of stuck in Cincinnati, not doing much else except gigging and not being able to pay the bills, etc. What was the impetus for her escape? It's leaving me right now. At one point, she escapes.
Yeah, she sees a flyer for they don't say it's the Sturgis rally in South Dakota, but essentially it's a big biker rally in South Dakota. She sees a flyer for it, and they talk about this, you know, there's all sorts of live acts and people can get discovered there. And I think a friend of hers shows it to her, and she's like, South Dakota? But she has a big blow up with her mom, and eventually kind of runs away from home, which is weird because she's, you know, 30, but she's also staying taking care of her mom. But it's a really emotional scene about the conflict of, you know, following your dreams and your passions, wherever they may lead, even if they don't lead to overnight success, and kind of how far do you take it before giving up, that kind of thing, and familial obligations. But she does decide to take a chance on herself and go down to South Dakota. And she, you know, there's this giant kind of outdoor venue. She's got her guitar. She's got a dead car battery by the middle of it. She kind of gets ripped off and has a confrontation with some locals when she goes up onto the stage. They're, you know, yelling stuff at her, insulting her. There's some, you know, vaguely / not so vaguely racist stuff thrown out. And she ends up meeting this guy, Casey. And he's kind of a soulful, you know, guy with an awesome indie beard and indie hair. He's part of a band. He's rejoining a band for this gig. But he strikes up a relationship with Dandelion. I thought you were synopsizing this. I'm sorry to take it over, Pat.
No, because I forgot the impotence. You just took it the rest of the way. That's fine. We can get into particulars, but I think one of the reasons I forgot the impetus is because it was so sudden. You know, suddenly she's in Cincinnati. She's having some trouble with her mom. They're having issues with, you know, not having any money or times or getting, all she wants to do is gig. And then boom, she's on the road to South Dakota, which is not an easy or casual trip. Let's face it. You're going to be on the road for about 3 or 4 days and not knowing a soul, going into a motorcycle festival, which oddly would be the worst place for a singer-songwriter to go. I don't.
Well,
so there was a lot, that kind of disconnect from reality, I think, had me think why she went. So
yeah, it's weird because I don't know. I understand where you're coming from. I don't necessarily think it was a disconnect from reality. I got the feeling more that it was one of those things where the promoter of the concert kind of set it up to be like adjacent to this biker rally. Like it was just something that was happening at the same time. Like, hey, if you're coming to the rally, come see this music. I could be totally wrong about that.
Contest that she could possibly win. Like there was some sort of contest involved with it.
Possibly. Well, that's the strange thing about this, because for whatever reason she went out there, I think it was possibly to be discovered, possibly because there was a contest. That all gets derailed by the robbery, by the relationship with Casey, and they're kind of wandering around, getting to know each other and starting to make music together. You know, it's one of those films that I feel like I've seen, you know, 100 times, but not quite like this. And I think a lot of that comes across in the filmmaking sensibilities. I was thinking about it. You know, Lynn Tron, who made Waiting for the Light to Change last year. Mm-hmm. It's like if she watched the movie once and then decided, I'm going to infuse this with my own take on A Star Is Born. I think that's what you have here with Dandelion.
Interesting. I had some problems with the improbables of it. That's what separated me from the film. But I agree with the filmmaker sensibility of it, because there's so many beautiful asides in it. You know, where suddenly we're going on a road and we're taking the journey with the two lovers, and you know. The comparison to Waiting for the Light to Change is apt, because again, that was another dream state of being in a certain circumstance in your 20s. Well, in this case, in their 30s, and you know, going to a place of cinema rather than reality, basically, you know.
Right. I mean, and it's beautiful because they're going all over through these canyons and caves and woods, and there's these beautiful kind of tracking shots of them riding on a motorcycle. It's very, you know, romantic. It's sort of a road movie that all takes place in one spot. They just do a lot of kind of exploring in this area.
Right. So to me, like, for example, the mother character could have been completely eliminated and you still would have had the premise of the film. She was there, obviously, to add the conflict to her eventually getting on the road. But her abrupt leaving of a sick mother is like, well, OK, what's the purpose of you living and taking care of her if you're just going to go to South Dakota for I don't know how long? Yeah,
I mean, I think that was the question that I don't think got answered. And I know we said we weren't going to get into spoilers, but it's sort of mild spoilers. Mom is okay.
Again, it was so convoluted. I wasn't sure. So I only bring it up, and I don't think it would necessarily spoil the plot, but it's, you know, the main plot's a romance. So,
right. And
as an older gentleman, I tend to view these romantic movies as a been there, done that scenario. But in this one, it seemed a little more unique. I was interested in them as a couple, which I don't see much in other romance movies they were intriguing enough as characters in their coupling to latch on to them, you know.
And that's why I drew that sort of once comparison, because that's a movie about two people who are in love with each other as much as they are making music together. Right. And I think this is a great film about the process of creating art. I mean, I'm not a musician, but I am an artist, but I could identify with the crafting, the bouncing ideas off of each other and themselves and fine tuning it until they come up with a song. They kind of perform it. They test it out and then they kind of perform it in larger kind of venues to perfect their harmony. It's beautiful. And again, without getting into, you know, the some of the twists and turns of the film, there is a complication in the relationship that I appreciated because it's a complication. I'm doing some heavy tap dancing here. It's a complication that has been introduced in several films like this.
Yeah.
And if you've seen those movies, you know exactly how it's going to play out, but they don't play it out that way here. There is a scene that is missing from this movie at the end that is in all those other movies, a, you know, tearful pleading reconciliation and then a dot, 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 which is kind of like a choose your own adventure. We don't even get the tearful pleading attempt at a reconciliation because of what happens during the course of this relationship. And I think that's the focus on Dandelion as an artist who's coming into her own, growing up, getting hurt, and then really having to find her voice because everything is sort of stripped away from her by the end of the film. And then a powerful closing scene where a wardrobe choice, it's as striking an image as when the sheriff steps out of the bushes in Bonnie and Clyde wearing that all black shirt. It's like, damn.
Well, I'm not trying to, try to attach myself to what the filmmaker was thinking. But I'm kind of theorizing that there was a fantasy element to that conclusion. Did you have any feeling about that?
No.
It's
fantastical in that it's so different than what we had seen of this character up to that point. But I think what was missing, and I'm glad that they didn't leave it in because it leaves it up to us to figure out
right
how far the metamorphosis had gone.
Right.
It's missing a 6 months later or 2 years later card because before that scene, we see her and she's sort of coming to a realization about what she has to do, you know, go out on her own and really make it out, you know, make it on her own. And then we see her triumphant. You could argue that there's more scenes that could have been put in there, but I think that that announcement of like, oh, here's where she ends up. It's like, wow. And that song that she performs is a banger. It's just beautiful.
Yeah. I did good music in it. And that's what you need in a film like this. It didn't bother me with what you just said, what the inner title or, you know, the a montage or whatever, but, It did to me make the film more unique. It made the film a little more, interactive, if you will, because it doesn't hit you over the head, right? So you're trying to figure out, number one, do I know this character, Dandelion, or did I get a sense of the person behind it? Because that's her stage name. She actually has a name under that, but she doesn't necessarily like to go with that real name because then she's messing with the mystique of Dandelion. So it was interesting to follow along in that, like you say, metamorphosis and see that very powerful conclusion come to forth. And I mean, this is a type of film that had like layers on it. Because, you know, it's, like you say, a very straightforward story. We've seen it before. We've even seen, you know, the drama of it before. But the way that the director, Nicole, put it together puts an extra layer of interest on it, you know?
Right.
And I see the light coming in on me. So. It's a light. Oh.
Hopefully it's not a nuclear war. Do you see rockets coming past your window? No. the thing about the song or that closing scene, it's not just the outfit. It is also the song because it is unlike anything that we have heard from her or the other musicians in the film leading up to it. A lot of it is very kind of melancholy, very country, almost country infused urban. She does this song called it's initially called Ghosts of Cincinnati, but I think they changed the name to Over the Rhine. And it's about her Dandelion's kind of life in Cincinnati and the gentrification and crime and all this other stuff. When she sings that in the studio, because she and Casey go off to meet up with this record producer that Casey knows from a long way back, and he says, "Hey, you want to throw down a record?" And she's like, she's never had this opportunity before, so she goes in the studio and just knocks it out. And it's, the camera is set low on Kiki Layne as she's in that studio or in that recording booth, and I don't think it, I saw it, you know, a few days ago, but I think we pretty much stay on her the whole time or most of it. There's not a lot of like fancy cutting or anything. We just get to watch her do this performance. And I know she's been in a bunch of other stuff. You know, If Beale Street Could Talk, she's going to be in the follow-up to The Old Guard. And she was in, I guess,
Native Son.
Native Son.
Don't Worry, Darling.
Don't Worry, Darling. Yes. I was a sidebar, Pat. I was concerned about this movie because I hated The Old Guard and I really hated Don't Worry, Darling. And so when I saw, oh, this is the star of both those movies I hate, I was like, I don't know about this, but I got to say, Kiki Layne, amazing. This movie won me over.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm just saying that she's been in other stuff, but this is really she is now on the map. People have to see this movie and see this performance. I think it's award worthy.
Interesting. I know I saw If Beale Street Could Talk. As I recall, I didn't think much of the adaptation of the James Baldwin novel, but I couldn't remember her for a second from it. No offense, Kiki, but it's but I've seen you see her growth, and I remember her for Don't Worry, Darling, because it was supposed to be like this white area, and then she, you know, stands out as an African American in it. But so that's what I remember for, interestingly enough. And talking to her, I see a very intelligent actor who knows how to reach out and get something that isn't necessarily there. And that's what I saw in Dandelion, that she was, and through her performance, she was reaching a place for this musician that I think Nicole didn't expect when she wrote that character. So, yes, definitely one to watch, especially as she goes on and gets meatier and meatier parts. This is her first lead, right? Mm-hmm. It's her first lead in a movie, and she carries it with admirable qualities. As we go along in it,
she's so good that there was a laugh moment in the movie. I know you were in the lounge while the screening was going on, so you didn't get to experience this, but it was so surreal to me. There's a scene where, again, not spoiling anything, but late in the film, she and Casey have had an experience. We'll call it an argument just for a shorthand, and it doesn't go well. And she ends up like bawling her eyes out, just like, and you can see the devastation on her face. And then it cuts to Casey, who's also crying, but it got the biggest laugh in the theater. And I don't know that it was a laugh moment. It's just that he looked like such a little, like, you know, emo wuss crying, and, you know, basically crying into his pillow. I'm like, if this was supposed to show something, it just shows how great she is. And she's best that she's not concerned with him much anymore.
So what do you think of Thomas Doherty as Casey? Not much.
It's complicated because I think the movie is about Dandelion, so Kiki Layne gets the best material and the opportunities to act. He was good. He was the less developed kind of character. I mean, if you've seen A Star Was Born, I'm glad that they didn't steer into the whole, I used to be famous, now I'm slumming it on the traveling circuit or something. There was his own dynamic with the band there, and he didn't die, you know, by his own hand or anything like that. But it's just, he's not the most interesting of the two characters. So he was fine. I don't have a sense of his abilities as an actor, because I think he did what was called for, which is to support the star of the film.
And, you know, this is, it's an unusual project to move forward, because I don't know if I'm in the funding game and I'm seeing a bunch of scripts coming across my desk and I see this script, I don't know if I'm saying, yeah, this is an automatic green light. Let's get this, the people together. I guess it comes down to Nicole Riegel, and because she somehow pitched it in a way that the final result came out, and the way that she, even though you look at the words in the page and you're sort of like, well, this is sort of things that we've seen before, the result of it again has a lot of layers in it and a lot of intrigue as to, you know, where these characters end up, how they end up the way they end up, and you go all the way with it. You know, it's never boring, even though there are circumstances in it that would say, you know, who cares? If you described it to somebody, they'd say, I don't know, you know. But you know, you have to really experience the film itself, not just the plot of it. You have to experience the film itself to get the buzz.
I think that's exactly right. And, you know, the music is so key to this. I hope that I was talking to some folks at the festival who are kind of involved in the film or, you know, adjacent to it. And they're trying to figure out the release date. And it's not clear whether or not this will have an official soundtrack, but if they're smart, they'll put one out, even if it's just, you know, not a physical thing, because it's great music. I mean, I would put it up there with Once. I mean, that's infinitely listenable. And so is this film. But I think the key difference is that even though this isn't a musical, these characters, these artists are figuring out the relationship through the music they're writing together. Right. And when things get rocky, I'm telling you, it's almost like a cross between, for the kids out there, it's like a Taylor Swift album, where you're writing your feelings into the music that you're putting out to the world. Or old fogies like you and me, Pat, it's like Stevie Nicks and Lindsey Buckingham, like working out their lyrics, you know, like Silver Spring, you know, you'll never get away from the sound of the woman that loves you. There's an element to that. And it comes out, if you're really, the songs are all, you know, energetic and tappable, and you can kind of bop along to them, even though they're sad, a lot of them. But if you really listen to the lyrics, you're like, oh, damn, she's calling you out on your nonsense. And he's saying, look, I'm no good, but, you know, I guess I've got the hair and everything, but I want to make it work, but I'm not sure because there's just something else going on. There's so much in here that if it had been spelled out in dialogue, I think it would just been eye rolling.
Right. That's a good point. And it's interesting about, I wouldn't call myself a songwriter, but I do write songs. And there's always a dynamic between when you're writing with somebody, in the sense that my guy just does the music, but we are simpatico as far as what we're trying to communicate. So that's how it emerges. My words and his energies through those words create the song. And as far as the creation of songs and how they're created, that is about as close in any movie I've seen that, whereas it feels like that's the creative process in songwriting. So yeah, very, very well done there too. The greatest strength to me of the film was the fact that it didn't really have a narrative. Right. There's a plot, but there's not like this grand narrative, and there's not this grand scheme between these two lovers that is going to create this magical place at the end. It's more of kind of a snapshot of how this thing progresses and where it goes when it doesn't progress anymore.
Snapshot's a perfect way to refer to it, because I imagine if you followed along this far, you can probably imagine where the movie's kind of end up, even though we haven't spelled it out. But let's just say the Dandelion and Casey end up on their own journeys. I feel like, yes, both of these characters are going to go on and in some cases repeat the same mistakes that they've made throughout the film, in other cases transcend them and, you know, ascend. And I like that when I come away from the film thinking, oh, I'm wondering what these characters are doing now, rather than, oh, the credits rolled. I don't have to think about them anymore.
Right. It's interesting. You're absolutely right. The one thing I also wanted to discuss just briefly was the fact that she almost was scared of her own reality, in the sense of she took the persona of Dandelion. She's got this gig at a vague hotel where she's just doing her singer-songwriter stuff, which is a gig I have never seen anywhere beyond open mic.
You got to go to Cincinnati, Pat.
No. I guess. But in that sense, you know, she was hiding behind Dandelion. She was hiding. She was escaping to Dandelion. And to see her hide behind that shield and use that shield as she moved along the snapshots in the story, and coming to a place beyond that shield is part of the energy of the picture. So again, I was very, very intrigued with the fact that she did not want to cop to her real name throughout the whole thing. But when she did, it had a huge impact.
Right. And I think that's part of that is just, yeah, her even past the point of feeling like she had a right to believe in herself because she'd been struggling to make something happen this whole time. I felt like if she let go of the Dandelion persona, that was admitting that, okay, it's time to, you know, stop singing in hotel lounges and probably just pick up a mop in a hotel or something. I gotta do something. But yeah, I got to say, there was a real, for me, show-stopping moment that if AMC or Regal or the theater chain, not the director, is smart, they'll clip this and put it in front of all their movie trailers, because there's a moment when she's performing for these hotel patrons who couldn't give a crap that there's live music there. And she just has enough. And she says, if you want to talk on your phone, why don't you go somewhere where there's no one performing? I almost stood up and applauded at that moment.
I found that whole thing very unusual. And in the sense of it's, again, I feel like that would be the last place where a singer-songwriter in her style would be to enter. If you were in a place like that, it would make more sense to me to have that grand piano and the lounge singer, you know, doing like middle of the road hits, so it could be a background for the people in the bar, not something where they have to pay attention to her and hear her poignant lyrics.
You know, it does feel odd, but you know, Nicole Regal, I have not seen her first film, Holler. This is only her second film, so I can only imagine where she's going to go in her career as a director.
Was her first one Holler?
Yeah.
Did you say? Oh, I love that film.
I didn't see it. I gotta catch up to it. But
yeah, it's a good one.
And that was also, I mean, she's from Ohio, so she tends to do like smaller scale personal stories, from what I understand. I thought the singing in the hotel lounge bit was a bit weird, but I don't doubt that Nicole Regal wrote that based on some kind of an experience of seeing that or being in places where that happened. I could say 10 years ago when I used to go to the Potbelly sandwich shop in Lincoln Square, they would have a guy in a guitar, like in the corner strumming and playing like live music. I'm like, this is strange. He didn't seem to care that people were talking and not paying attention to him, but you know,
he was there for background. Yeah, they kind of stopped that after a while. When Potbelly's first opened, you find a little mic stand and a spot for a musician, and occasionally, as you went in there, you would see a musician play. So,
they even had like a little loft set up in some of the places, it was a dedicated performance spot.
Right, exactly.
The one thing I want to talk about, and I don't know how you felt about this, and it kind of came out in Kiki Lane's Q&A after the film, but she brought up that, you know, she's an African-American actress, and she's playing a black character in the film. I don't know, maybe in your interview, if this came out or not, but was this originally written by Nicole Regal for a white performer, and it was switched to Black when Kiki signed on, because I almost got that impression by something that she said, and I can't remember how she phrased it, but she did talk about working with Nicole to make sure that the character was authentic to the way a person like her would experience going to a place like South Dakota. In fact, she said when she first read the script, she had the same reaction Dandelion did, like, South Dakota, aka, why am I going to go to a place where there's a bunch of like white, sweaty, possibly racist bikers, you know, running around. But she kept talking about the experience of going into like, going into a place where there's a lot of country music, getting into the country kind of folk world, which is a very kind of white space, and feeling like she had to navigate that and bring her own authentic experience. And she kept using the term, the community. I did not feel any kind of racial commentary in the film at all. I don't know if that is a testament to whatever she brought to it, or whether it was just not part of the text or the subtext of the film or what. It just, when she said that in the Q&A, I was like, that might be your experience of it, but especially because the band, when she meets up with them, this kind of folk band that she, that Casey is part of, it's very multicultural. They've got like an Asian chick on the violin, an older Black lady. So I'm like, at that Q&A, I'm like, lady, what are you talking about?
Also, too, I think it was generational in the sense that, you know, I don't know, it would be Gen Z, I guess. You know, these designations, they get on my nerves. But just younger folk, you know, there is a lot more, I believe, of a mixture of different types of people together in the 20 something world than there was when I was in my 20s, for example. I don't know. It just seemed very natural to me, and it seemed very natural. Now, sure, she had a fish out of water situation in a biker convention in South Dakota, sure. But when she got with her peers, it just didn't, it seemed to melt away. And so to me, it was like, well, this is a generational thing, that people are not as uptight. And I think, you know, this is an issue, not to bring up politics, but this is an issue right now where people are like, well, how do we accept? And if people are accepting, are they woke or whatever? You know, it's just like, where are the lines drawn? Are the lines blurred? If the lines are blurred, let's all move on, et cetera, et cetera. So to me, that was a blurred line situation with her peers. Now, you know, you go beyond that. And what was, did she just get her guitars, her soft guitar case stolen?
I think it was the guitar case, but I had the feeling that she had like a lot in there. Like maybe her ID or something, or maybe it was just very personal to her. She didn't. And also, I don't know if it was a contrivance, but it's stolen from her. She chases after the guy and then she's like given up and she's gone back to her car. And all of a sudden Casey shows up and he's got the guitar. I'm like, was he even there? The guitar case. I'm like, how did he show up with this guitar? Like, it felt like that was a scene that was missing. Like, how did he know? How did he find the guy? Did they get in a fight? And then he goes and returns it. But, you know, it's fine because that was their meet cute.
Do you think this was a longer film that she decided to really, like, just start chopping up and make it a little more dreamlike? Or do you think this was the intention all along? I mean, it's an interesting question because it does have a choppy, dreamlike quality to it.
I wouldn't call it choppy. I mean, when I think of choppy, I think of scenes like I was just talking about, where like there's this missing context. It seemed like there was a scene and then another scene, but I don't understand how they connect. That's why I think of choppy.
Right.
In this one, there are dreamlike elements, especially when they're exploring together, writing music and kind of coming into gigs. Like they do this kind of like a performance in almost like an alley or something, or a storefront at night. That didn't bother me so much. This felt like it was a vision that came together and she wrote it, she edited it in her head, and then she realized it. That's how I feel about it anyway. I don't know if that's true.
Well, it was certainly, you know, it added to the, again, layers to me of the film and a certain quality that, you know, goes beyond a narrative. That's one of the great things about cinema. And I must say a great thing about all of the films that I saw at the 11th CCFF, because there seemed to be an overriding theme of there is something beyond these narratives that you can't really grasp sometimes, but they're very affecting emotionally, and it's done through the combination of visual and dialogue and character that makes the movies great. So, you know, it's not, again, if you went and described this to somebody, if you described Dandelion to somebody, I don't know if they'd necessarily want to see it. But I guarantee if you sit down and watch it, you'd be like, okay, this is something different. This is something that I'm connecting to in a way that I don't necessarily connect to films otherwise.
I think
it's hard to explain, and I don't know if I explained it. But
no, you did, and that's my conundrum. I said it's, you know, it's got a great central performance, but the movie is very good, but it's not great. This might be a great movie that I just need to watch again, because it's right. One of those films where you're watching it and they kind of meld styles. Like, it's got a traditional plot, but it's told in a very laid back way, like a Lynn Tron film or Terrence Malick, that kind of thing. So when you're mashing up these things, you're kind of like, this movie's almost 2 hours long, and there's these long stretches of, oh, we're just going to walk through the woods holding hands, or yeah. I'm going to stand at the precipice over the Badlands or whatever, and just kind of like soak it all in. It's a beautiful moment. But I could see someone sitting there going, can we just get back to the love story? Wasn't there a complication we have to deal with? It's not an easy film. It's not a mainstream film. It's definitely an independent movie, and I think a pretty terrific one.
We were having a very interesting discussion last night about how do you create trailers out of films like this? Now, obviously, the trailer for this is obviously the singer-songwriter angle, so this is an easy one. But there were other films within the festival that you're like, well, where do you start there? How do you get the hook in somebody? And you don't think about that unless you're in distribution or something. But you know, as film observers and analyzers, we really have a good connection to that. I think we would be able to say, okay, here's the key scene you start your trailer with, and then you base your moments after that. Now, a lot of the trailers now I've noticed are adding, especially films that do a festival run, they'll take some of the quotes from people who pre-saw it and put it on there. I'm not a big fan of that in the trailer. But especially if it overwhelmingly is on there, like every 5 seconds you have a big, big blocky quote. But you know, when you're in the marketing field of movies, that's, you know, your goal is to sell the thing. So how do you sell it? And it's just an intriguing note. And I was talking to Ryan, the movie guy, about that. We were kind of laughing about it because we were just coming up with scenarios based on a couple of films that were in the festival that really made me laugh. So it was mostly drunken talk as usual.
Well, it's funny because my eyes kind of glaze over, because there is a way to cut an independent movie trailer, just like there's a way to cut mainstream movie trailers. They're kind of the same. And so on the one hand, you really want to say, hey, this artsy movie that you're kind of on the fence about, look at how many people are raving about it and how many people love it. We got quotes and quotes and quotes.
Right.
But because that's sort of de rigueur now, every movie has blocks of quotes on it. So it's like everything is amazing and you have to go see this.
It was very interesting when they started to take lines off of Twitter. If something wasn't working in the critical world, they would just start trolling on Twitter. Oh, there's a guy who said something. And you know, you can just say
but the bylines. Well, the bylines, if you'll notice, got really small. It's like film of the year. It's like I can't even read who wrote that.
Yeah, they don't put names either anymore. So if you're looking for your name, sorry.
Yeah, you get an outlet call out, and that's about the best you can hope for.
That's the best you can hope for these days. So, because there's no personality, there's only entities.
Put that on a t-shirt.
Yep.
Well, Pat, I think any closing thoughts on Dandelion? Again, a film that our fine viewers will not be able to see for a while.
Well, here, my biggest closing thought is that, again, this has layers to it, and I think it's sort of a Rorschach test for everybody. Whatever layer you get out of it will be based on your observation of this interesting little musician, singer, songwriter having a relationship based on a life that seems on the precipice. So the interesting thing to me is the difference between the stage person Dandelion and the reality behind Dandelion, so which is a real name, which comes out. And that's my last thought on it. Not that I have a thought in my head.
we've been talking for almost an hour, sharing plenty of thoughts. So don't worry, you're still with us, Pat.
All right, thank you.
But no, that's sort of in line with where I'm at too. It's a fascinating character study.
Yes,
it's
very much
told
so.
In a really unique way, and it's one of those things where I would definitely recommend, you know, when this comes to a theater near you, even if it's an art house theater, go see it with an audience, because I feel like it's a great big screen movie, especially when the songs hit, especially when that last song hits, and the Ghost of Cincinnati number Over the Rhine in the recording studio. I felt like I would be missing so much if I was watching this on my laptop or just watching it, you know, on demand on TV. It really does kind of give a concert energy to the movie. So yeah, it's really solid. And I'm looking forward to seeing what Kiki Layne and Nicole Riegel I'm looking forward to pronouncing her name correctly. And even, you know,
that's when you know you've made it.
Yes. When I pronounce your name right, you're a star. But no, I'll throw a bone to Thomas Doherty. I'm curious to see how he comes out of this, because he's been in stuff. But I was talking to a friend earlier today. I'm at that age now, Pat, and maybe you can relate, where there'll be people popping up in movies who are like these hot young stars from like other TV shows or movies. And people are like, oh my God, I can't believe that's that person. I'm like, who the hell is that?
No, I know, man. Or you go, like, for example, I'll get an opportunity to talk to one of these people. And then I go to their IMDb page. And I'm like, oh my gosh, these are like, there's 10 things here that I've never seen, but I'm sure a lot of people have seen them. So we're just in a golden age of entertainment there.
And I'm glad you did not say right. I'm glad you didn't say we're in a golden age of content, because I would have, my skin would have fallen off.
That's the perfect way to end this thing.
Yes. All right, sir. Well, thank Pat McDonald of Hollywood Chicago or .com or Pat Dandy, as you're listed as today.
Yes, Dandelion.
Yes. Thanks for hanging out and talking about this with me. Like right after the movie was over, I came in, I found you in the lounge, and I said, I'd like to talk to you about this because I have thoughts. Also, it was very surreal because I was kind of popping in and out of the screening, kind of stretching my legs. And it's strange to watch an actress 100 feet tall on a big movie screen and then to go into a lounge right next, and she's like sitting there playing Sorry with with the publicist. But no, she was Kiki was a delight to meet and talk to for a bit.
And she's very ardent and intellectual person in my encounter with her. So up and coming, baby, as they say.
And you know, she went to DePaul. She's a solid Midwest actress. Is wonderful. Great rapport with the fans. Yep. But all right. So, Pat, thank you again. Folks out there, follow Pat's stuff at HollywoodChicago.com and also on the radio. I'll have all links to all of his stuff down below. And when Dandelion comes out, I'll probably repost this interview, and that will also include links to Pat's interview with Kiki Layne. But in the meantime, in some capacity, you'll be able to see my brief red carpet interview with her. And till next time, whenever that is, whatever that is, thanks very much. Take care. Oh, and like and subscribe. Obligatory plug there. So thanks.
Blessings.
Blessings.
In creating the character of Dandelion, can you tell me about the collaboration between you and Nicole in terms of finding the character, getting involved with the project?
You know, I think that Nicole was, you know, she just created a space for me to just really dig very deep into the character and just pour so much of myself into it. You know, Dandelion's from Cincinnati. I'm also from Cincinnati, and just being able to pour so much of my personal experience of like being a dreamer who grew up in Cincinnati. So she just really created space for that.
And what are you going to carry about Dandelion from either the character or the film into your future productions?
I'm going to keep singing. I'm going to keep singing.
Excellent. Well, best of luck. Thank you very much.
Thank you.